Good evening, everybody. James McCanny here with my Science Hour for November 21st, 2019. And with so few shopping days left for Christmas, I'm going to encourage people who are looking for a whole house water filter. First of all, I think we're pushing the limit to get things to you by Christmas in terms of the regular water filters. But we do have the MR5, MR7 whole house water filters available and can ship right away. We're just behind on a little bit on some of the other filters. Just been busy fall at the factory. But MR5, MR7, the MR5 would be plenty good for the average household with a flow rate up to about 7 gallons a minute. That's a lot of water. And then you would not be showering in chemical soup. That's, you know, I just read another story where the cancer rates are going through the roof in the United States. Yeah, it's horrific. And in my estimation, it is mainly because of water. Water in the household. You open up the tap and you just get, you don't even know. It looks like it's clean, but in most places, it's really, really bad. So you got to get those chemicals out of your water. So go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. That's all I'll mention about that. This is a commercial-free show, but now and then I have to put a little plug in so people are remember that I support this show off the revenue that comes from the sale of the water filter products in my books. There's no donors, there's no sponsors, there's no backdoor government CIA money flowing in. It's just what you purchase. I don't take donations. Anyway, this Roger Stone convicted this past week. This is a total sham where there shouldn't have even been a Mueller investigation. And then they draw people in to be witnesses and then become political targets. And Roger Stone was nothing more, nothing less than a political target, which Hillary Clinton wanted to get because Roger Stone knew all about them and exposed them because he was very serious that he didn't want her to become president because literally the evil queen of the West, the witch of the West or whatever. But, you know, then they drag him in there and then catch him in a lie. And now they want to put him in to prison for 20 years. For, you know, this is, none of this should have ever happened. People who are involved in political campaigns, this is amazing when the, anyway, I'm not going to go into more detail, but this political hatchet job type of tactics is really undermining democracy. It's undermining the ability of people to run a fair campaign. And then with the emphasis that they keep repeating that WikiLeaks, they keep repeating that WikiLeaks got their information from Russia, which we all know is not true. So anyway, this goes on, and it's still going on, the accusations of Russia doing this and Russia doing that, and people being pawns of Russia. Russia is a minor player on the international stage. When you have the United States going into countries like Bolivia, where the CIA completely overthrows by military force an elected, duly elected government and starts killing elected officials and only because of what turns out to be the lithium supply in Bolivia. Yeah. Oh, man, this is the pot calling the kettle black all the way. A quick note on Venice, Italy, is sinking, and it has been sinking for a long time. A lot of the buildings there are propped up on balloons, massive balloons that sit under the foundation to hold them up. Otherwise, they would have been underwater a long time ago. So the old story of don't build your house on sand, especially sinking sand, Venice has been there for a long time, but about four times a year, there is an excessively high tide that comes in. They're trying to build these walls that come up and protect the city. But they're not done. The project is behind schedule. But this also is used incorrectly by global warming people trying to claim that this is due to global warming. It's not. Venice is sinking. And right now there's, I think they were like under a meter underwater, that's town square. So this is due to the high tides that come in annually, and some are larger than others. And due to different situations of the lunar orbit, basically, these high tides affect Venice more than other places. Okay. Just a quick note, NASA in a media announcement claimed it was going to the moon by 2024. Oh, please. You know, and then Elon Musk is even saying he might be going to the moon as early as 2022, which is literally only 2 years away. Now, you might be able to build a rocket that can go there and get out to the moon. That's not the hardest thing in the world. That is really not difficult at all. The problem is putting people on this thing and going into uncharted territory, and then what do you do once you get to the moon? Well, if it's a program worth its salt, it would try to land on the moon and then get the people off successfully. That's a very difficult thing to do logistically, from many aspects. And I don't think anybody, let's say that they were going to go in 2024, there should be exploration, there should be surface exploration of the moon, there should be, which the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, if the data they are submitting to the public as lunar surface data, it has a resolution of about a meter. That's not good enough to land something on the moon. And this is people pretending they're something they're not. That's all I can tell you. But the real issue always has been, always will be, the radiation issue, and nobody is talking about it. It's like it doesn't exist, which tells me they're doing more to put money into a nice studio someplace and have this all, you know, visibly, photographed, videotaped, etc. But the other issue is that will there be any third-party independent verification? And that's the key issue in all of this. It was with the Apollo program. It still is with the Apollo program, that there is no third-party independent verification, which is what you need for a scientific claim to be at least credible. There's a listener sent in a chart about CO2 on Mauna Loa. Mauna Loa is the one of the big volcanoes on the Big Island of Hawaii. And they have a CO2 study facility there where they test the level of CO2 in the atmosphere. And it appears they're doing it the right way. It's based on the mole, which is the amount of CO2 in the air based on the chemistry of the air and also removing water. So it's simply everything that's in the air. And it shows that the CO2 rate going up over the last probably 40 years, which is since they began measuring it. But then they have a caveat at the end of their webpage, this NASA webpage, where they have a caveat that's basically states that this does not correspond to the surface level CO2. And they have no explanation for why this CO2 level is going up the way it is. It's not due to you driving your SUV up and down the road. I can guarantee you that. So they don't really say what it's caused by. Mauna Kea is, by the way, an active volcano. And so is this an indication that there is increased CO2 based on the volcano? They don't say that. They don't mention that. The other issue is that it's linear. So the question is, how could you get this linear response to to CO2, increase in CO2, a linear response. If it was due to a volcano, then it would go up and down, and it would be variable and not a steady linear increase. And there are little cycles within this data also. So I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I have no idea. They don't explain it. They don't have any, not a trace of explanation there. Just a quick mention of, I mentioned this already, the Bolivia CIA coup, where now in the news media, if you read it, they're going, oh, the Russians were there. The Russians were there to cut a deal with the, by the way, the duly elected leader of that country, and they should have independent say over what they do with their resources and who they sell it to, but not anymore. The Bolivia sits on the biggest reserve of lithium in the world. It's in the lake, dry lake bed. It's not really dry. It has enough water to support vast numbers of flamingos, so it has the largest flamingo deposit or population in the world, flamingo birds. But under this, and it also dries out on an annual basis, but it has, just right there, just sitting there, all you do have to do is scoop it up, is lithium, which of course is used mainly in batteries. And the worldwide requirement for lithium is growing as automakers and everybody else gets into the electric market. So somebody had their eye on that and pushed the CIA to go in there. And what they did is they had a military coup. The CIA went in there, supported the military junta, as has been done dozens of times in Latin American countries, started killing the leaders. And Evo Morales, who has been the elected leader there since 2006, very popular, but also note that they do not belong to the World Bank. They have their own banking system. They do trade internationally with their own currency that's independent. And not anymore. That's all going to change. And then you had this like third-rate political hack woman who steps up and goes, she declares herself president and then becomes recognized internationally as the interim president. So this is what they would do in the United States if you did not have the thing they fear in the United States is arms. Now, the Bolivia population was not armed. And so they're out in the streets marching around, screaming and jumping up and down, but they can't do anything because they are not armed. They don't have a armed presence. And so that's the one thing that has kept the United States from going this route, because the population is armed. And so, yeah, the arms are not for deer hunting. That's not the reason for the amendment allowing basically stating that the populace should maintain arms. It is specifically for a tyrannical government, and the populace has to raise up because the founding fathers knew and had seen repeatedly throughout history that an unarmed peasantry was a vulnerable peasantry. In fact, just going back into Old England a little bit, the sheriffs, remember the sheriff of Nottingham and Robin Hood and all of that? Well, the sheriffs were put out into the populace to maintain order, law and order, and primarily to keep people like Robin Hood from emerging. And so the order in Nottingham was to round up Robin Hood and hang him in the town square to just show you that you do not oppose the king. But the real issue here was archery, that the local people could take a piece of wood and some string, flax, the cord from the flax that they were growing, and could construct bows and arrows, which were highly effective, more than highly effective. And if the armed populace rose up, now there's a two-edged sword to this whole story, in that the king needed these peasants to be adept at the use of archery equipment. And the reason being is if they were attacked, because they were continually having wars with France, especially, and internal wars, etc., but they needed the peasantry to be able to very quickly materialize and become a standing army. So what they did is on Sundays, they would have a big picnic, and all the men were required to practice archery, and the sheriff would be the keeper of arms. Very interesting. They knew this. And then at the end of the day, the sheriff would go around, collect all the bows and arrows, and put them under safe lock and key. So the populace did not have their own archery equipment. And the people who made the bows, etc., were a lot by themselves also. So the peasantry were not really organized, except by the organization provided by the king. So they were very aware what would happen if the population were armed. Their royal guard wouldn't last 10 minutes. If you remember the famous Battle of Agincourt, where was King Henry V, as I recall, who marched into France, northern France, into Normandy, and started taking small towns, etc. And then they were marching north to a English reserve on the northern side of France called Calais, when they happened upon the small town of Agincourt, where the French knights had been gathering for days and days and days. Finally, a number of about 25,000 French knights gathered there. King Henry V's army had been suffering from lack of food, from dysentery. He had lost about 25% of his men. He had about 8,000 total. He had lost about 2,000 basically due to dysentery and sickness, and they did not have food, so they're marching up to Calais to get resupplied. As they come along Agincourt, the French massive knight army is blocking their way. So this is a standoff. They can't go back. They have to get to Calais, so they take a stand up on this hillside, and it's raining. It's a kind of a misty time. And in the army of Henry V were about 500 hardcore trained archers. And so early the next morning, the French mounted a frontal attack onto the English small army. So it's about 25,000 horse-mounted knights of the French, basically, that have gathered in this Agincourt region. 25,000 French knights versus about 6,000 English, no match at all. And most of the English were very sick, standing on the hillside, and they had knights, some of the knights of the English. But in the core group, excuse me, there were about 500 archers. And when the French finally made their assault from the front, the English had positioned themselves in between two regions of woods on both sides, so the French couldn't get around them. They couldn't mount a rear attack or a side attack, a flank attack. So the French came marching in, thinking this would be easy prey to just march over these English and kill them. And the archers stood up, and as the French knights moved in to attack, once they were within about a 200-yard range, the archers opened up, and they could fast fire these longbows, which had a range with big arrows, big, massive, heavy arrows that had a range of between 150 and 200 yards. And in less than 2 hours, the French army had been completely defeated and decimated because of 500 archers. So the English were very, very well aware of the archery, the issue with archery, and the armed populace. That's the point. And so in the United States also, you'll find the people that want to take control and take control of the government, they are adamant about removing your right to bear arms. Every excuse in the book that you don't need a military-grade weapon. Well, let me tell you something. Yes, you do. And at the time of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights being and the amendments, the musket was the bill was the weapon of choice. They didn't foresee all of the weapons that are available today. But the average person is very easily adapted, just like the longbow, very simple weapon. Anybody can pick up a AR or other type of weapon and use it. And so all of the shootings, of which there was another one in California just this last week, high school shooting, once again, the cry goes up, we got to take the populist guns. And that's what it's all about. They would rather sacrifice kids in a high school, and then that gets the next generation up in arms against people who have arms. It's a two-edged whammy that they're trying to deliver to the public. But at any rate, that's what it's all about, because with an armed public, they can't take over the United States. In fact, the biggest standing army in the world is the United States populace, at around 200 million. There's no standing army in the world that is armed and trained in most cases as the United States public. So anyway, that's what's going on here. So you can see this playing out in real time. And Bolivia, back to Bolivia, the poor people of Bolivia were not armed. So that's possibly, potentially, a mistake of the leaders of that country, not to train their people, knowing that at some point the United States would come in to overturn them, because the CIA is the police force of the World Bank. And the World Bank did not like the fact that Bolivia was an independent country financially. Okay, just a quick mention here, another great article being written by Yvonne Whiteman. Now, she's an author from England. She started writing articles on the Colburn, I don't know, 1 or 2 years ago. She just kind of came out of nowhere and decided to make this her study, and she's been doing amazing, absolutely amazing work. And I wouldn't say she came out of nowhere, because I don't know her past. I don't know her prior to the, and her and I communicate. She'll send me an update on her latest writing, but her latest one is on the Great Flood and the Colburn references to the Great Flood. And that is an extremely good paper. Now, I have not read the whole thing, but I've spot read it. And I'm going to have to go back and study this, because, of course, I'm the person that made the Colburn available to the public here in the United States. Just a little bit of history here, if you've forgotten. It was around 2003, around the 2002-2003 era, when I released my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. And prior to that, nobody really had heard about the Colburn. And that book went just into orbit immediately, overnight. It was released on the Coast to Coast AM show. It had been pre-selling, because I remember my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Change, was highly popular, selling just cases of those, cases and cases of that book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes. And then I came out with another book, and I pre-announced it, but I didn't announce the title. So everybody thought I was going to write another Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes book. Or in addition, I already had the sequel to that book called Surviving Planet X Passage. So when I announced the next book, everybody thought it was going to be another Planet X book. So it sold pretty well. And there it comes out that the title read on the public for the first time for the public was Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. And that night, I sold this is back in the old days. I wish this would happen again. But $42,000 worth of books in one night. That's what happened to that book. It absolutely went into orbit. And that's where the public was acquainted with the Colbrin. And, of course, there's been a lot of controversy since then. The CIA went bananas when that came out because that's the information that they are desperately trying to keep from the public. Literally, it was, let me explain what the Colbrin is. It's the library of Joseph of Arimathea that had been held in England at the Glastonbury Abbey. And after the Great Fire, when the Romans went in there, these were the remnants of the books from Joseph's personal library. And he was the great uncle of Christ. He was Mary's uncle, mother of Christ. And after the crucifixion, he took Mary, the mother of Christ, Mary Magdalene, the cross, the chalice from the Last Supper, and the other artifacts from the crucifixion, and he took them to England. And he had been working in England. He was a rich Roman businessman, and he was basically marketing metals that were mined in England and bringing them back to the Roman Empire. So that's who Joseph of Arimathea was. And if you remember, in the Bible story of the crucifixion, he's the guy that goes up to Pontius Pilate and says, "Can I have the body?" after the crucifixion. And he says, "Sure, go ahead, have at it," because nobody else knew what to do with it. So he took the body of Christ from the cross. And then the rest is history, as they say. But at any rate, so that's what the Colbrin is. It's bits and pieces of Joseph of Arimathea's library. It is sometimes incorrectly called the Colbrin Bible. It is not a Bible. In fact, the Bible that we call the Bible today is a compilation of books also that have been kept throughout history and translated and translated and reinterpreted and changed till they're unrecognizable, to the point where people don't even believe them anymore. People don't believe in the Noah's flood. People don't believe in the Moses event. And I talk about this, of course, in my work, that these are historical events, and there were reasons for why this was happening. And in both of those cases, it was due to comets. And by the way, I just find it, if you follow scriptures, this past Sunday, the reading was from Christ is in the temple, and the apostles are going, "Ooh, look at all the gems and the expensive stones. Isn't this impressive?" And Christ turns around and he says, "Hey, in the end days, none of this will be standing. There won't be a stone on a stone, and all of these precious gems will be meaningless." And they go, "Well, what's this all about?" And he says, "How are we going to know when this happens?" He says, "Well, there will be," he said, "don't worry about rumors of war." In fact, a lot of people misquote this. They say, he said that there will be rumors of war. No, he said, "Don't pay attention to rumors of war," because those are going on all the time. He said, "And there will be earthquakes and upheaval, basically physical upheaval on the earth. But," he said, "the real signs is you look up in the sky. And when you see that happening," he said, you're going to know it." So anyway, interestingly enough, that was this past week's scriptures. But anyway, on to the idea of Yvonne Whiteman's latest paper. She talks about the Great Flood. And previously, she talked about the incident with the Moses incident, the fleeing from Egypt of the Israelites, etc. Very good paper. So she has a whole series of these. So look her up. It's Yvonne, is like Y-V-O-N-N-E, and then Whiteman, W-H-I-T-E-M-A-N. And I'm sure you can Google that and find her latest paper on the Great Flood. Very complex work, by the way. And she keeps churning out these piece after piece after piece. And I think this is like, I don't know which number this is, but very many in her series. Okay. On to a little bit different subject. How about the Mustang E, Ford's contribution to high-end, high-performance sports car electrified? This is 100% pure e-car, the Mustang E. if you're, you know, the Mustangs go back to when I was a kid. That was the hottest car. And at that time, it was a single-wheel drive, and you could get like a 283, I forget what the Ford engine was, the cubic inch engine in the Mustang. The 283, I think, was a Chevy engine. And then the Plymouth engines were like a 307 cubic inch or something like that. But the Ford Mustang had its appropriate high-end engine that you could put in there. And that was a pretty hot car in those days. So the Ford Mustang has carried through all of these decades. And now the Mustang E. I might buy one of these babies if I become rich someday. Today I couldn't afford the hubcap off of one of them, but be that either here nor there. Very interesting. So the point is that the car makers are going all into electric cars. And this is at a time when electric power companies are going bankrupt. I predicted the PG&E bankruptcy. In fact, one of my fans, talking to my fans the other day, noted that. He says, I can't believe you. He said, you predicted that right on. And I'm predicting at least one of the next bankruptcy filings for a utility company will be Xcel Energy, as they try and dismantle their completely ill-spent money on three-blade wind turbines. They have the biggest installed base of three-blade wind turbines, completely useless, and they're starting to have to take these down because they're at the end of their physical lifetime. But also, they have two nuclear power plants that are over their lifetime. They have to decommission them, for which they don't have the money. And they're trying to get $2 billion. No private investor in their right mind would put a dime into this company because it's headed to bankruptcy court, clear and simple. So that's going to happen. I don't know when. They approached the Minnesota State Legislature to try and get $2 billion out of them. And needless to say, poor Minnesotans up there trying to manage their own lives, etc., don't have $2 billion to stick into a failing electric company. But this is at a time when electric cars are bourgeoning into the limelight, adding tremendous capacity requirements for the central power companies. They're just not going to be able to handle it. Some estimates are that the increase in public usage will be 40% stacked onto what we currently do. And so these programs where they say, oh, they want to be green, excuse me, they want to have alternative power by 30% of it by the year 2030. Well, let me tell you, folks, by the year 2030, just the increase in power requirement will be more than 30%. So their estimates are so far off. I don't know who's running this stuff, but man, they just have their head completely where the sun doesn't shine. Nobody has their head on straight. There's a few papers that are being printed taking stabs at this aspect of alternative energy or that aspect, but none of them have a handle on this. And if you read my book, McCanny Wing Generator, World Energy Project, with a addendum, The Myth of Alternative Energy, I talk about all this in 2009, and I knew about this in the mid-2000s when finally people said, hey, you got to write a book on this. And of course, the Wing Generator, which is coming out now, is the solution to all of this, to all of this. And you have to understand where wind comes from. I talked about that last week, just briefly. The wind comes from the Earth discharging the solar capacitor. And on a similar note, Volkswagen this week announced a new electric motor. And this is where Technology, European engineering, German engineering is once again at the forefront. They have a drivetrain. It's a drivetrain to go in the Volkswagen, purely electric, a 200 horsepower drivetrain. Now, I don't know if you've driven a Volkswagen. I have. Even the new ones, they're a little bit bigger. They're, you know, a little nicer than the ones I drove back in the, the 70s. I had a Volkswagen bus. I had a Volkswagen car, quite a few different Volkswagen cars. But believe me, 200 horsepower in that little thing would rip up the road. You couldn't keep the wheels on it. So a 200 horsepower drive, that tells me that Volkswagen is going into bigger vehicles of some kind. But this is an inline electric motor drivetrain when the motor, the 200 horsepower motor, can fit in a sports bag. So this is small, and this is the wave of the future. Just a little bit of information on motors. The higher RPM they are, the smaller they can be made. And so clearly, in the same note as high RPM engines, inline engines that go in, say, your modern front-wheel drive vehicle, these are relatively small, high RPM motors, and that's where you get the torque. It's from the high RPMs. And so clearly that was Volkswagen's concept in building this motor. It's small. Of course, being small, it's relatively lightweight, but packing 200 horsepower into that small package is just absolutely incredible. So this is the way technology is moving, and I would say Tesla is going to have its hands full. Tesla got the original electric cars on the market, but it's like when McDonald's was the hamburger stand, and all of a sudden there was Burger King. And if Burger King put in a hamburger stand on a corner, McDonald's would put one across the street. Or if McDonald's put in a hamburger stand, Burger King would put one across the street. Why? Because when people are there, they're going for a hamburger, and you got a potentially 50% chance of somebody going to your hamburger stand instead of the other one. So I'm all for electric cars, of course. It's really the wave of the future. And people have talked about compressed air cars. No, that ain't going to happen. The infrastructure of trying to put compressed air in around the country, electricity is already there. So all you got to do is hook up to it. And by the way, I do sell electric EV charging stations along with the wing generators. That's one of my products. It's one of my, what we would call an appliance, or electric furnaces, or other electric devices, electric pumps, and of course water filtration, water mixed in with that, water cleansing, pumping, filtration, reverse osmosis, water from the air, atmospheric water generators, etc. So but anyway, the need for electricity is going to grow. And once again, the wind is the real source of electric energy, not burning high energy content fuels. That should have never happened in the first place. And I am just amazed that General Electric can still sell these pig-in-a-poke three-blade wind turbines. They're now making a bigger one with a 351-foot-long blade. I mean, it's more than silly. It's goofy. As those things don't work, can you imagine all the wind that's blowing through that thing without doing anything? Just absolutely absurd. So just a quick other note on another story out this week on this, in fact, once again, dealing with XL Energy up in the Northeast. 2 weeks ago, I think it was, I talked about the Noble Wind Farm, where they're decommissioning it, close to $500,000 per tower to decommission these three-blade wind turbines. And they, the county is picking up the tab on this, because nobody happened to write into the contract, which I talk about in my book, in 2009, and had the counties that allowed these installations of three-blade wind turbines, had they read my book, they would go, oh, gee, we have to hold these people responsible for who's going to decommission these towers when their failed lifetimes are over. And right now there's another wind farm in Minnesota that's being decommissioned. I forget the name of it, but once again, we're talking around $500,000 per tower. And so people are waking up and going, wait a minute, you know, where is the money going to come from to decommission these towers when their failed lifetime is ended? Because the only reason these are being installed is because of government subsidies. That is the only reason. And the big players in this, the T. Boone Pickens and the other people, the big players in the wind industry laugh about it. That, you know, they got into this business for the subsidies, not to create electricity. They don't care about creating electricity. It's not even in the business plan. The only thing they're there for is the subsidy, because that's the money they stick in their pocket right now. When they put one of those three-blade monsters up, that's money in their pocket today, including tax incentives, all kinds of other incentives. Now, here's a rather humorous story. A long time ago, I announced when Elon Musk was sending up his 5G satellites to send up literally thousands of them, tens of thousands eventually, and they were putting up 60 at a time. And so I said, you know, this is ridiculous. And then they're like news outlets for so-called science and engineering, they're going, oh, isn't this wonderful? Now we can look up in the sky, and each one of these blinks, blink, 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 blink. So you have 60 satellites in a row, in a sequential order coming by, blinking, blinking, blinking. Well, astronomers did not say a word. They didn't say, peep, I'm the only one that talked about this. And then all of a sudden, the astronomers go, well, you know, our telescopes are being, you know, our view of the night sky is being ruined by this. The astronomers weren't worried about little kids not being able to go out into the backyard and see stars. They weren't worried about amateur astronomers around the world not being able to see the night sky because of blinking satellites, thousands of blinking satellites. You know, and only when it affected them did they wake up and say, doggone it, this is affecting our telescopes. What a bunch of complete moron, selfish babies. That's all I can say about professional astronomers. Talk about a group of people who have their bread buttered, all of them. It all eventually comes from the government somehow, because there's another example of an industry that would not exist if it were not for your tax money, and for which you get nothing in return. They get a cushy paycheck and they get to fly around to scientific meetings. I call them scientific vacations. But that's, you know, that's only when it affects them do they say something. What a bunch of crybabies. And certainly not interested in the rest of you out there. And here's one last ridiculous story before I get into the main science topic. This was on space.com, one of my favorite disinformation sites where I go to see what kind of crap they're trying to pawn off on you, the public. But space.com this week came out, I mean, I'm still laughing at this, with an article right at the top, this main line article. It says, "Objective reality does not exist." And this is based on some quantum mechanical viewpoint. So if you can even believe this, space.com proclaims objective reality does not exist. Now, this is the leading science rag on the internet for science information or astronomy or space or whatever. So there's no objective reality anymore. Never was, never will be. So let me just ask them a question. How were they so sure that there was a Big Bang? That was a purely quantum effect, according to, you know, the alleged, the theorists that talk about this alleged event. If there's no objective reality, then Was there a Big Bang? That's an alleged objective reality. So I guess not. According to space.com, all bets are off. Nothing is real. So there you go. Oh, my goodness. It doesn't get any nuttier than that. So, okay, I'm going to switch gears here now. A little bit of a takeoff on Volkswagen producing this 200-horsepower inline electric motor. I've seen the insides of this, the engineering drawings, and basically the rotors and stators are very compact, and they're basically based on wheel motors, but they stack them in a very interesting configuration. But the main issue here is that in terms of simplicity, if you were going to replace a motor, it would be a couple bolts, take it out, put in a new one, if, you know, we're talking about the lifetime of an automobile. So compare that to oil changes, compare that to grease, compare that to all the complications of carburation, injectors, fuel injectors on a gasoline engine, or even worse, sometimes on a diesel engine with the turbochargers, all of the other items that go into a modern diesel engine. Just replace that with a simple one-moving part electric motor. But this is something that I happen to follow closely. I'm actually involved in the design world on very similar things, because electric generators are the very same thing, basically, as motors. They're just working in reverse. So if you understand motors, you would also, by default, understand electric generators. And the efficiencies and the things that you do to make them smaller, less costly to build, more efficient, and also on the staging of these elements and the different methods of staging them, because once you try to combine things, there's a difference, there's a difficulty in making everything work in synchronous, electrically, in synchronicity, making the phases the same, etc., matching them. This is highly tuned engineering. But the Volkswagen motor was basically a very beautiful, simple design. And so now that they're releasing this, so that means that Volkswagen has been working on this motor for years. And this is finally the one that's going to go into production. So they've built it, they've tested it, and it's now worthy to go through an announcement and into production. So the Volkswagen, the way these cars are being built now is there's a big flat plate, which is the battery that goes in the very base of the car. So when you're sitting in the car, you're sitting on the battery, no matter where you are. And so that goes into the floor. And then there's an intricate voltage and power distribution system that delivers the energy to the motor, and then also keeps the motor from overheating, all of the other things that happen in, especially with lithium ion. I've talked about that, one of the core issues. They are making them safe, but once again, it's like anything. There are, remember, it was a minivan a number of years ago that had a screw that was right behind the gas tank, and if they got rear-ended, the screw would go into the gas tank, and the screw had nothing to do with the gas tank. It was, I think, part of the bumper or something like that, but there was a screw that actually, and this happened, and of course, people ended up dying because of a fire in the car. So hopefully now engineering has gotten to the place where they cross-check all of the other parts of the vehicle for compatibility or incompatibility, as the case may be. Okay, I want to change gears a little bit here, and this is something that started when I was pretty young. And it's a turbo type of engine. In its fact, it's something like a jet engine for powering an automobile. Very simple. It's simply a rotor. And If it were to run off natural gas does not require refining, etc. And a lot of vehicle fleets are running off of either natural gas or propane, bottled liquid propane, LP gas, which is a component of natural gas. So it does take some separation. But this would be one alternative to electric transportation. It would be actually a very good one because natural gas is very clean. It's one of the cleanest burning fuels. But if you want to get away from burning high energy content fuels completely, then we should be going electric. But unfortunately, politicians simply have no clue what this is going to take. There's all kinds of estimates that just are completely false. That I'm not sure where politicians are getting their information, especially those that are pushing the Green New Deal, because it shouldn't be an issue of politics. It should be an issue, very simply, of industry taking the horns and moving forward a competitive industry. But here's the problem. Subsidies have prevented industries from moving forwards because it's like scientists who depend on government grants. This is another great example. I talked about a little earlier about astronomers. Astronomy has no incentive to change or upgrade or be better. If they depended on you, the public, paying them directly for their product, which is scientific information, they'd be paupers. Nobody would give them a dime. It's only because they can get into the government and get a link in there. It's like NASA doesn't produce anything, has not produced a thing. They've produced a lot of promises. That's it. For the trillions of dollars that have poured through that organization, nothing has happened. And so the wind industry and the solar industry being highly subsidized has not incentivized those industries to do anything creative. It has not incentivized them to create a product that works or that will solve the energy situation because they're getting their paycheck. They don't have to do anything. It does not have to work. So that's why, for example, I don't want to take government subsidies. And government subsidies is a racket. Like all rackets, you have to be approved and stamped and certified by the groups of companies, their little union, their little group, the American Wind Energy Association, etc., that your product meets their standards. And of course, anything that works simply is not going to meet their standards. It's like so many other things. It's like peer-reviewed journals do not have an incentive to change. The whole idea of a peer-reviewed journal is to prevent change because change would mean that what they have been doing is bogus, very simply. So peer-reviewed journals, the incentive is to keep doing the same, because that means you get to stay in power. Your message becomes the dominant message, and you know that's why science has not changed in 100 years. That's when the big push for peer-reviewed journals came in, where everything had to be peer-reviewed. And as I pointed out in my work, in my webpage, I have a page on peer review and the bogus nature of peer review. And by the way, real science and real mathematics does not get published in peer-reviewed journals. Excuse me, it just does not. Real science, real mathematics, real engineering never get published in peer-reviewed journals. A little bit might trickle into the IEEE, a little bit, but not much. Real science, real engineering, real mathematics are done outside of the peer-reviewed system, very simply put. But getting back to the alternative energy industry, there's no incentive for them to change because they're getting a paycheck. You take away that paycheck, all of a sudden, these companies would have to produce a product that worked and would have to be profitable. And they can't do that. That's why they're right now in Congress begging congressmen to pass another subsidy bill. And they're relying on everybody running around, jumping up and down, saying we need green energy to do this. That's what they're relying on. They're not relying on producing a good product. And in 5 years, when those subsidies end, it will be the same thing all over again. So that's why I don't publish in peer-reviewed journals. I have peer-reviewed journal published articles, and very good ones. But I don't play that game anymore. It's a game that is playing into the hands of people who are incompetent. The people who maintain peer review are basically incompetent people, and that's the only way they can stay in power is by preventing other people from publishing and promoting their own stuff. It's a good old boys club. That's all it is. The same with wind energy, the same with astronomers, the same with just about everything you see out there. It's fixed. It's rigged for some guy, some company, some entity, some group that got an in someplace and wants you to pay their freight. So that's what the government does. So cutting out government subsidies for all of these things, including NASA. Look at what you've gotten from NASA out of 60 years or 70 years, literally, since it started. For all the money, you've gotten nothing. You've literally gotten nothing. I mean, if the few little things that snippets that are there aren't worth a tinker's dime. So anyway, all of this should be left up. And now you see that private industries are coming along and just racing to put up good products that actually work. That's because their incentive is to actually create a product that they can make a profit off of. So they have a business model, just like any other business. They have an incentive to create value in their product. So at any rate, very simple. And the same with the wing generator. I'm not going to take incentives or subsidies. The business model does not depend on subsidies. Just remind you, my webpage, the MR5, MR7 whole house filters. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, scroll down, and link to the secure web ordering subpage where you will find all the water filters, all the books, etc. And by the way, I'll be converting to ebooks here shortly. So everything is in the form of what I call e-products, the CDs, the DVDs, etc. And remember my paid cast, $3.95 per month, and that price is going up. Remember my Patreon channel. Go there, take a look. It's patreon.com/JMCCSCI. That just launched, and so there's really not a lot there. But it's up and it's starting to run and starting to get noticed. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.